98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Weekly Blast.
Cliff Kingsbury has had a distinct advantage in 2020. Unlike Vance Joseph, most of his players have stayed healthy. Most of his players have been with him from the very beginning, which is now 27 games and counting. And yet, we've arrived at another crossroads. Does Kingsbury need an offensive coordinator by his side, allowing him to focus on the big picture? Yes. Does he need a better kicker? Yes. And how does he lift an offense that has been diffused in the past month, picked apart by talented defensive-minded coaches? Now that's a good question. Clearly, the offense needs an infusion of focus and coaching. No more pre-snap penalties inside empty stadiums. No more confusion among wide receivers who too often end up in the wrong place. More targets for DeAndre Hopkins, especially in high-leverage situations. More passes over the top, escaping the 20-yard rectangle that is suffocating this offense. Now, barring a total collapse, Kingsbury won't be on any kind of hot seat after this season, even though missing the playoffs with this schedule would be absolutely brutal. But if the head coach can't turn this thing around in the final month of the season, he will be under enormous pressure entering 2021. And as we've already seen, pressure is not something he always handles so well. All right, today's Bickley Blast brought to you by my great friends at Chapman BMW. Test drive the ultimate driving machine at the newly renovated Chapman BMW in Chandler. At Chapman BMW on Camelback, you can shop online at chapmanbmw.com.
You know, first and foremost, that's the NFL, and you have your ups and downs and teams going hot streaks, and then there's going to be games where you struggle, and I said it. The last couple weeks, I thought Seattle played really hard, executed well defensively, and New England did the same. And when plays were there to be made, we weren't great at consistently making them. It starts with me with the plans and making the correct calls. And then when we do have opportunities, we got to make them. But that's the league. You're not going to go 16 straight weeks of playing at your elite level. And these are the kind of valleys that you have to battle through and continue to work and continue to evolve. And that's what I expect this offense to do.
That was Cliff Kingsbury's weekly visit with us yesterday here on Bickley and Murata. He joins us every Monday, win or lose. That was the case after the loss to the Patriots on Sunday that dropped the Cardinals to 6-5. And look, people will point at this all the time, Bick, and they'll say, NFL, you know what that stands for, and it's not National Football League. Not for long. You don't have 4-5 years to turn around a franchise these days. That being said, you're right on the money. This is not hot seat territory for Cliff Kingsbury yet. When you look at the big picture of what has happened under his guidance as the head coach, they went from 3 wins to 5 wins. They're at 6 with 5 to play and still very much in the thick of the playoff picture in the NFC. And how you get to a certain place matters. And when the Cardinals were 6-3, going into a game at Seattle to really kind of put their fingerprints all over this division race, it was a much different feeling. They've lost 2 games. They've looked very ordinary offensively in those 2 games, and I know people want immediate results. And it is frustrating. I'm not going to sit here and say the last 2 weeks haven't been frustrating. But it is way premature for anybody to suggest that Cliff Kingsbury's job should be in jeopardy at this point.
No, right. Exactly with how much Steve Keim has invested into this choice as head coach, you've got to believe that there's going to be a longer leash than that. Here's what complicates matters, though, Vinny, if you ask me. You look at the quarterback, and I would say that clearly, as a budding franchise quarterback, Kyler Murray is going to have a lot of power and a lot of say in this organization going forward. And if a lot of the frustration that he is feeling now is born from things that are not firing in this offense. Receivers who are clearly not always on the same page. You brought it up in Sunday's game against the Patriots. There were even more examples, even the commentators pointing out, wow, you had two wide receivers within 2 yards of each other. What'd that happen for? Okay, you get too much of that stuff happening. You've got too much of the penalties happening. You have got, you know, a coach who is very, very obliging and not much of a taskmaster. And you might have a quarterback in Kyler Murray who wants something different, who thinks that the head coach is holding him back. Now, keep in mind now, I know a lot of people in this listening audience, they have trouble listening sometimes. So hear me clear on this. I'm speaking theoretically here. You could have a quarterback like Kyler Murray say, that dude is holding me back. I like him. I like the fact that he digs me, but he's holding me in this offense back. What if he lobs in a call to Lincoln Riley and says, coach, you want to come here and get this thing going? It's a really nice place to live. I know you don't really want to coach in the NFL, or at least you don't think you want to coach in the NFL, but this is a really good city. Okay, that's how fast things can turn in the NFL. Mm-hmm. Cliff Kingsbury needs to avoid this. Cliff Kingsbury needs to find a way, in my opinion, to get out of this season with a stamp of success on this football team. Now, how do you do that? Well, like you said, how you get there matters. So I don't think that there's a clear-cut answer as to what is going to constitute a success in 2020. But I can tell you this. In my opinion, from where I'm sitting, missing the playoffs would stamp this season a failure. Okay? I know some people would look at 8-8 and go, hey, that's three more wins than last year. Double thumbs up. That's not me. We all need to want more, demand more than that. So to me, if you were asking me right here and now without knowing what it looks like, you get to the playoffs, that's going to stamp this season as a success. Now, I also believe if the Cardinals get to the playoffs, they might be in position to be the team that nobody wants to play. They might be in a position to actually make a run at it. The NFC, as we've discussed, has been shifting. You never know from week to week, month to month, who is the clear-cut favorite. There isn't one right now. And by the end of December, who knows what team that is going to be. But as we discussed about an hour ago, when you rank the NFC contenders by quarterback, the most important position on the football field by far, I'll take my chances with the guy the Cardinals have. Now, is he better than Aaron Rodgers? No. Better than Russell Wilson? No. But in a playoff scenario, I like their chances. So getting there, to me, would open the door to a possible magical kind of run, maybe even a playoff victory. But getting to the playoffs, I think, would stamp this as an inarguable success.
Oh,
that's the way I'm looking at it.
I agree with that, because is 8-8 going to be good enough to get you there? I don't know. I've got my doubts on that. But also 8-8, unequivocally and mathematically, you're looking at improvement. Five wins to 8 wins. That's +3. That's a good number. But again, the path to get to 8-8, that means you will have finished 2-5 with some winnable games down the stretch. That would not be acceptable. And some people might say, okay, that is satisfying that they're at least moving the number in the W column up. But you're 6-3 with a chance to take control of a division, and then you don't make the playoffs. That's not acceptable. I agree with you getting there. And even if the and I don't have as much faith if the Cardinals eke into the, and this is current, it could change, but from what I'm experiencing from this team right now, I don't have the same level of confidence in the quarterback / offense to compete with the stronger teams.
Oh.
Now, if somehow the Cardinals can navigate their way to the top wild card spot, the 5th overall seed, then take on the Giants or Washington or Dallas or Philadelphia in the first round, yeah, then maybe you have a chance to make some noise. I wouldn't favor them, from what I'm seeing right now, against any other potential NFC playoff team.
Okay, the way they're playing now, I give them a chance to win 2 games. Eagles and the Giants, I think they lose to the Rams twice and the 49ers. Given the way they're playing right now.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to improve now to get off of that 8-win number, in my opinion. And so that's on them. What would definitely stamp this season as a failure, no matter how you want to do the math, if the 49ers finish ahead of you, if you finish in last place with an 8-8 record, failure. I don't want to hear about they won three more games, because San Francisco is showing you what a connected team with intensity and urgency and bloodlust can do. They've got everything the Cardinals seem to be missing at times. And they're a team that, you know, I've got a decent source up there, and I told you guys a couple of weeks ago that they kind of decided we're not out of this. They were not really impressed with any of the teams ahead of them, and they said, let's not throw in the towel on this thing.
Sure.
And they haven't.
But let me ask you this question. Did you find it odd, because I was a little bit shocked that San Francisco was able to beat the Rams. They've swept the Rams this year. They did announce themselves as still players. They're one game behind the Cardinals, so they're still in the playoff picture. But did you find it strange at all that most of the post-game chatter coming from the 49ers players was, Robert Saleh is really good at his job and he should be a head coach next year?
Yeah.
It's not about, hey, we're still in this thing and we're still fighting for a playoff spot. They were kind of, you know, campaigning for their defensive coordinator to be a head coach, and the timing was a little weird.
Well, yeah, there were two things here. I think Robert Saleh he's deserved a shot. He's African-American, and his players love him, and they don't want to see him victimized in this good old boy network that has existed for many years in the NFL. But after the game, it was even weirder. Kyle Shanahan, instead of spending his post-game press conference talking about what was a great victory over the Rams, he had to talk about how his football team had nowhere to practice and nowhere to play. So so that situation was also part of their focus. Yet I do know that they're a physical team that is extremely well coached. A lot of people love Sean McVay. For my money, Kyle Shanahan's the best coach in the division. And so I think they've got that. I think they have got the best coach team from week to week. They don't have the best roster. They certainly don't have the best quarterback. But that team can't come up and catch the Cardinals and pass the Cardinals, given the injuries that they've been left for dead. Okay? So and that is why anybody who wants to use injuries as an excuse, just don't. Because the 49ers are showing you how you have to react as a football team. So the Cardinals now have to get this all done. Now, it's a lot more difficult to turn a season around than to just go, hey, you know what? We need to get our heads out of our backsides. We better get to the playoffs or this season's a failure. That doesn't mean you're going to improve. How do you do it? Okay. My opinion, the defense, they have got something of an identity. They have shown the ability to play well under adversity. They're not good in endgame situations, just like the offense is not good. This whole coaching staff, in my opinion, kind of gets shaken and rattled at the end of halves, particularly the end of games. And they got to be a little better about that. But I'm not here to hate on Vance Joseph. I think what he's done the last couple of weeks has been exemplary. I think he has done his job as Cliff Kingsbury's keeper as defensive coordinator. Cliff's got to raise his game. He's got to raise this offense up in the ways that we talked about earlier. You got to get the ball over the top. You got to stretch out these defenses. You've got to coach up these players so they're running the right routes, so the quarterback has full faith where they're going to be. You're going to have to get the quarterback to continue to target DeAndre Hopkins even when they're double teaming him, bracketing him, all that stuff. Feed that beast all day long. And then don't lose your nerve in the final 5 minutes of the game. When it comes to a 4th-and-1 and there's a 130 left, don't suddenly abandon everything that you believe as a football coach because you're thinking about, oh my God, we better win this game. We better not lose this game. That's not the way to do it.
Yeah, I think you hit on something interesting there. And it seems like from the outside, Cliff Kingsbury, ultra aggressive, plays to win the game in the first half. In the second half, with recent late game situations, it's playing not to lose.
Yeah.
And that contradiction is a problem.
Yeah.
Because it hasn't worked out. And we saw it again on Sunday in New England, and you mentioned it in the blast about the kicker position. We asked Cliff Kingsbury about it yesterday. Still has faith in Zane Gonzalez during his press conference. Cliff was asked again, do you worry about the psyche of Zane Gonzalez?
I don't. Zane understands that comes with the territory. And, you know, those are kicks we got to make. And he's been really good, like I said, yesterday for us. And he understands that you know, we got to make those cakes when we have that opportunity.
A lot of people hear those quotes and they say, why? Why don't you worry? Why do you still have faith in Zane Gonzalez? This is more than, you know, three big kicks over the past month plus have been missed. And one of those occasions, he got a redemption shot and he made it. But there's been two big misses that have led directly to losses, or at least you can point to directly to losses. Jay Feely, longtime kicker in the NFL, NFL analyst. You hear him on the station a lot. He was on with Doug and Wolf yesterday. And this is about a minute long, but he kind of advocates for what the Cardinals are thinking right now. Wouldn't replace Zane Gonzalez at this point.
Well, hopefully it's not now. You know, I still think Zane has a tremendous amount of ability. I think he has more ability, and his best kicks are better than anything I ever hit. You know, you go back and you say, okay, what was he last year? He was 89% last year. That's an unbelievable year. You know, and I know he's struggled, you know, especially into big moments here this year. And I would just caution, you know, you have to make those kicks. He knows he has to make those kicks. You know, but you can't, who are you going to replace him with? Who are you going to go get? Do you think that there's somebody that you can step out and bring in right now that's going to fix that position? No, you'd be going and getting somebody who's young and inexperienced going into critical games where you have to make kicks. And I think a guy who's been there, who's done it, who's failed, has come back, has an opportunity to make those kicks than somebody who is a big uncertainty, a young guy who hasn't done it before. And so, to me, I think the prudent move right now is to continue to focus and help him to be the best that he can be.
Obviously, I'm going to defer to Jay Feely on all things kicking. He knows the kickers around the league. He knows the personnel. He knows the position. He played it. He, you know, he's had successes. He's had failures. But to that, I would just ask the question, why does it have to be somebody young? And B, if you have the utmost faith in Zane Gonzalez as your kicker, why have you been carrying a veteran kicker in his mid-30s on your practice squad all year long?
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I really don't. And I don't know what more they need to see from Zane Gonzalez other than the fact that they really like his potential and his upside. But, again, it's you don't have to spend a lifetime watching football to see a kicker who's trapped in the net of one of those seasons. And this is one of those seasons for Zane Gonzalez, and he's missed enough kicks that every time he lines up for a high-leverage kick, I don't know, I don't trust him.
Even in watching the Cardinals play, Zane Gonzalez lines up from 55 in the first half. You're thinking, this is money. He lines up from 49 and under in the second half, or more notably in the fourth quarter. You have a mm-hmm. much different feeling because of the track record. That matters. And somebody pointed out the Cardinals, the kickers that have opposed them this year, they've missed two field goals, 21 of 23, from any distance. The two misses were low leverage kicks when the games were already decided, basically.
Yep.
They have been really hurt by the juxtaposition of high leverage kicks that their kicker has missed and high leverage kicks that the opposing kicker has made. That's been the difference in a number of games this year. And I don't view kicker, with all due respect, as I do other positions on the team where mm-hmm. you're bringing somebody in from the outside and disrupting, chemistry. You've been to training camp as many times as I have. You watch kickers and special teams players.
They're off to the side. They're kind of doing their own thing.
Gonzalez was brought in originally, right, midseason?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Replacing Phil Dawson.
Yeah. And he's already been bounced from one NFL city for having the exact kind of season that he's having right now in Arizona. This is a recurring theme with him. And he's not alone. There are kickers who do this, who cannot kick without momentum and security that they're reliable and they're having a good year. You think about it. You think about the pressure that a kicker feels when letting down a team, given what Vinny just said. They're off to the side during practice. They're not part of the trench warfare that marks the NFL. And to let those men down who are laying it on the line, I don't know if I could do it. And so, yeah. And that's, it's, you can't, as a team, you can't absorb too many of these. It's like a closer in baseball. There's no finite number as to how many blown saves are too many, but there is a limit. There's a straw that breaks a clubhouse's back, and a bad closer will do it, and a bad kicker will do it. Football is too important, and the kicker is too unimportant in the grand scheme to rely that heavily on the kicker itself. So,
yeah.
Like I said, there's been a lot of talk about Zane Gonzalez across a lot of platforms this week. That in itself is a problem.
You need
to marginalize the importance of your kicker, and you do it by scoring touchdowns.
I agree with that, and that it is a problem. It's not the biggest problem.
Right.
Exactly. You said it earlier, what the biggest problem is for the Phoenix Suns, and that is the limitations that have all of a sudden popped up offensively for whatever reason. And that's the biggest question going into these final five games, and especially this game against the Rams, is what is the reason this Cardinals offense has looked very ordinary the last 2 weeks after being the league leader in yards per game league-wide before that Seattle? Even after the Seattle game, with a lackluster performance, they were still number one in yards per game. Is it what Josh Weinfuss wrote about on ESPN? Have coordinators cracked the code on Kyler Murray? Is it the shoulder? Where does the responsibility lie on the conservative nature of the passing game with a lot of verticality or horizontal passes as opposed to verticality? Is it being called that way? Is that Kyler Murray's decision from what he sees? I don't know if you had, you mentioned it without saying what I'm going to ask you, but the Patriots on a few occasions, defensive linemen getting their hands up, jumping up and down in passing lanes with that mush rush. Did you ever have the feeling, or have you had the feeling at all this year in watching that? Because I believe Kyler Murray's had 12 passes knocked down. Can defensive coordinators, can they exploit the size of the opposing quarterback? Is Kyler Murray too small?
Yeah. Well, the first answer is yes. Is he too small? That is yet to be determined. I would like to believe that it's not true. He's not that much smaller than Russell Wilson, and yet Russell Wilson isn't encountering some of the issues that Kyler Murray is, because Russell Wilson doesn't have to beat you with his legs. That's the fundamental problem here. They've taken the legs out from underneath the table, and the table's collapsed. When you do that now with Kyler Murray and running the football, there's got to be more. Mm-hmm. If all Kyler Murray is a modern-day Michael Vick, this team isn't going anywhere anyway. You've got to find a way, as an offense, to function without it, to treat those runs as a gift, as a get-out-of-jail card, as a drive-saver, game-changer, but not as a steady diet in your offense. That just can't be what they do.
Yep, totally agree. Text GATE to 620-620 and listen for your name tomorrow at 7:30 a.m. for your chance to win a brand-new barbecue grill and a custom Arizona Sports cornhole set. You'll also be invited to an exclusive virtual tailgate featuring Arizona Sports hosts and a chance to win a $250 gift card and a Yeti cooler from Four Peaks. Text GATE to 620-620. The Arizona Sports virtual tailgate is presented by Four Peaks Brewing Company. Coming up, more NFL talk. We'll be joined by Mike Sando of The Athletic. Straight ahead, it's Bickley and Murata on this Tuesday, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Tuesday edition of Bickley and Murata here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. We're in the midst of the longest week ever in the NFL, and it will wrap up tomorrow, as you heard in the update. They're scheduled to play in Pittsburgh tomorrow afternoon. Here to make sense of that and all things NFL, senior NFL writer for The Athletic, Mike Sando, joins us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Mike, thanks for the time. How are you today?
Pretty good. Yeah, it will be a little weird with the noon on the West Coast hour. A little football tomorrow, huh?
I've never done a talk show in this time slot where I've been distracted by live NFL football, so that'll be weird.
Yeah, that's going to be different. Yeah.
But I just wanted to get your take, Mike, on the handling of this, and the NFL is kind of being transparent and attempting to be, and not treating every case the same. But what the Denver Broncos went through and were forced to play on Sunday, and what the Ravens are going through and seemingly getting the benefit of the doubt and pushback from the NFL, can you draw a delineation there on why that is?
Yeah, I think the Ravens had a situation where the positive cases were out of control. They weren't sure who had it. Was it spreading? Where did it come from? There was a lot more work to be done in their situation with lots and lots of tests positive, right, and needing to figure that out with tracing. I think in the Broncos case, they had basically a quarterback who tested positive, and then it came out that they hadn't done a letter of the law on all of the masking, distancing, all of that under the intensive protocols that are going on. So in Denver, there wasn't a mystery. They weren't like, oh, does the whole team have it? Where's it coming from? They kind of knew exactly what happened. It was a fire, but it was contained. And if you have a contained fire on your team, you're playing the game. And it doesn't matter if your quarterback's out, your kicker's out, your backup linebacker's out, it's all the same. That's agreed
you're
to before
the game.
Season.
Yep, well said.
Yeah, and so with the Ravens, they're going to try to play the game, but there was a lot more mystery of like, oh, shoot, wait, Lamar Jackson? Who was he with? Seven starters on offense, wasn't it? I mean, it's a different – the wildfire's out of control, and you got to contain it before you can play.
All right, here in Arizona, I want to talk to you about some stuff about the NFC West, but I'm going to start with the Cardinals. As you may have noticed, they've hit a little valley here, and defenses have taken away Kyler Murray's ability to gash them with his legs, scripted or unscripted, and as a result, this offense has been grounded. What do you see from the Cardinal offense? How concerned should Cardinals fans be at this point?
Well, it depends what your expectations were. You know, like I go back to what did we think before the season, right? They'd been a 3-win team, then they're a 5-win team. To me, this season was successful if they were 500, maybe a little better, and certainly if they got in the playoffs, right? I think all that stuff's still on track. You play tougher teams when you've had some injuries like they have on defense. You're going to lose some of those games, and I think you look at their losses here, Miami's a very good defensive team. It ended up being a high-scoring game. Seattle, you're in the division. The guys know how to play you a little bit, right? And you just played them, so you're going to get a better game plan. New England always has a good plan. They're tough to play. And this week, you know, heck, the Rams and Giants are tough outs defensively too. So I think for the Cardinals, if you still get that seventh seed and get in the playoffs, I still feel great about the season. And I still think they're in good position to do that. It's just not going to be easy because, like I said, they're banged up a little bit on defense in some key spots, and people are going to have a better plan for the two-dimensional quarterback, right? I mean, that's just the reality of whether you're Baltimore or any of these teams that have a special threat quarterback, defenses get better at playing you.
Mike Sando, senior writer for The Athletic, our guest here on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Bick and I were talking earlier in the show just about the landscape, where the Cardinals fit in top to bottom in the NFC, and the belief is most of the upper tier strength lies in the AFC, but is there an NFC team that you look at right now as head and shoulders above the rest, Mike?
Not so much. You know, I think there's enough uncertainty with New Orleans, even with their good record, that, I mean, is it going to be any different in the playoffs for them? You know what I mean? I think Green Bay has a flaw. We see that defensively with them. I think even style of play offensively, when it's working well, it's amazing, but they haven't really shown a great ability to shift gears when it's not working well. Sometimes it gets out of control on them. So there's a lot of teams with a flaw. You know, Seattle up and down offensively lately, defense, you know, trying to get better, but not great. So I think you can find a way to beat every one of those teams in the NFC a lot easier than you can find a way to beat Kansas City.
Yeah,
Pittsburgh, I guess, for that matter.
Right. Yeah, that's true. Now, there was a time when it looked like the Rams were emerging after the Seahawks had fallen down a bit. The 49ers, surprisingly, for all the adversity they face, they are not going quietly. How do you handicap this division race right now from what you see?
Well, I'm going to go back to what I was saying earlier in the year, which is, to me, the Russell Wilson's the thing you can count on the most. Now, they hit a rough patch there and almost went off the road, so I was almost about to change that, but I kind of feel that again. I feel like this last weekend with the Rams losing, Arizona losing, Seattle's got an amazingly easy schedule. You know, I mean, they're really set up to where they're going to win 11 games, right? I mean, you just look at the schedule. So that gives them the clear advantage to win the division. I don't think it necessarily means they're clearly the best team, right? I mean, that's sort of who's healthy, who's playing well this week, right? I mean, you could they can all beat each other, and you're not surprised. Even San Francisco with a backup quarterback just won their fourth in a row against the Rams. So the reality is just Seattle's got the advantage to win the division, you know?
Mike Sando from The Athletic, our guest here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. A lot of talk coming out of Tampa Bay. They're going into their bye week. Even though it's a week 13 bye, I think it's coming at a good time for that team with the struggles that they've had. What is your assessment of what you've seen from the Bucs, and more notably, Mike, the relationship between Bruce Arians and Tom Brady?
Yeah, the relationship thing's most interesting for the long term because Brady's full salary is guaranteed next year. So he's got a lot of juice there, right? And if after the year, let's just say they are one and done in the playoffs, or you know, if they were to miss the playoffs, you could almost see that organization like changing and bending to what he wants to, because he's going to sell the tickets and maybe give him the best chance to win, right? He's going to convince him of that. So that's really interesting after the year. I think during the year now, you know, they're not that far off where you might have thought they would be. Maybe you thought they'd have another win, but the Vegas point total, the Vegas win total on them was 9.5. If they go 3-1 against four losing teams in their next games, they win 10. So you know what I mean? Let's just zoom out. I think they've lost two games to New Orleans, which has an all-time great coach-quarterback combination, at least when they played them. They lost to the Chiefs, maybe going to be an all-time great head coach-quarterback combination. They lost to the Rams, who, you know, Goff's not great, but that's a good combination, right? I mean, they've lost to these sort of cohesive teams that have been together a long time, and they're not that. And I think you can see that in some of these games, but there's a chance for them to get better, you know, and figure out a way to play. And that's what we're going to find out from here. Does Bruce Arians bend to, you know, to make it a little bit more Brady-friendly? I think he needs to, but I'm not sure he will. And you guys know Bruce better than I do, but isn't that the million-dollar question, right? Is he, who's changing here?
I wouldn't, the way if they don't make the playoffs, I bet you're right. I bet you they find a way to make B.A. step aside and let Brady go. Because I don't think the way this is going, I don't think Tom is going to... I don't know. I don't know how he's interpreting all these comments from BA, but I think that you know, he was really successful in New England, and I don't think he's going to go through another year like that next year. So I agree with you on that. Yeah. All right, finally, in the NFC, because the balance of power is shifting constantly, the Green Bay Packers, how good are they in your opinion? Flawed, really good. We know they have a great quarterback.
Yeah. I think they're flawed. You know, I think we've seen defensively with that style of defense, it's a little bit of a gambling defense. There's certain teams that, you know, can really gash them in the running game. I think offensively they are a great offense, but they're limited at the skill position. So when you get in a team that can pressure the passer, I'm not sure they have enough guys who can win one-on-one, right? Devontae Adams probably can. I think they could really use a good tight end, a nice story on Tonyan, but I don't think Tonyan's winning one-on-one battles at the line of scrimmage like a Kelsey or these other top players at that position, or is there a second wideout who can do that, right? So that's why I think they'll make the playoffs. I think they may win in the playoffs, a chance to get to the Super Bowl because it's the NFC, but ultimately I don't think they're going to be able to finish it off.
Mike, thanks so much for joining us. As always, we appreciate your time and your insight, man.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Thank you, Mike.
You too. Thanks, Mike Sando from The Athletic. He joined us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Coulter Infinity Luxury Cars, legendary service. Visit CoulterInfinity.com. Coming up next, believe it or not, Phoenix Suns are in training camp getting ready for their new look season. We'll hear some thoughts from the head coach, Monty Williams, next. It's Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Dan Bickley, Vince Murata.
Bickley and Murata.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
My emotional tie to Ricky runs deep, and we had some really good conversations after the trade, and he was stellar, and that's why we loved him so much. And also losing Kelly. You know, Kelly had a big year, the best year of his career for us. So we still feel like it's going to improve our team. That's no disrespect to Ricky or Kelly, but Chris is Chris. I mean, he's one of the best players in the history of the game, especially at his position. I know we're looking forward to working together again. I'm looking forward to learning from him And we're grateful for Chris, but we also feel a great deal of gratitude for Ricky and Kelly and their contributions to the program and what they did on the floor. Those guys were great.
Suns head coach Monty Williams addressing the media today via Zoom, day one of training camp. Yes, it's a lot of ramp up this first week, a lot of individual work, but I think that that soundbite from Monty Bick kind of captures what a lot of Suns fans feel after that trade. I mean, Ricky Rubio was very popular. Kelly Oubre was wildly popular while he was here. And a lot of Suns fans didn't want to see them go. But, I mean, the three words that stand out to me from that soundbite, Chris is Chris.
Yeah, I like that.
You got to give up something to get something, yeah. And the Suns feel like they've accomplished
okay,
just that.
I meant to ask you this because I saw this over the weekend, the further comments from Ricky Rubio about how surprised he was that the Suns moved off of him, that he was convinced they had told him that you were going to be part of this. What did you make of that? What do you think that says about this whole thing?
I don't know. I have to believe Ricky Rubio and that's the message he was getting from his agent. I know there's a lot of underhanded, it might be too strong a word. There's a lot of shady stuff that goes on in trades and dealing with players and agents. I get it. I think if you were the agent of Ricky Rubio, you might be hearing one thing, but how shut off do you have to be to all the rumors going on in the NBA and rumors that weren't shot down ever? I mean, the Chris Paul rumors popped up and there was nobody saying, you know, this is not going to happen. Even Gambo, he didn't come out and shoot that down. So I don't know. It your heart goes out a little bit to guys like that. But in the grand scheme of things, like I said, you have to give up something to get something. And the Suns wanted to get to the next level and they felt this was the move to do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just kind of one of the dark sides of the NBA. But,
okay. I was curious what you thought about that and what that might say about the timing of the whole thing. But whatever. I do think that's very accurate. That with all due respect to Kelly Oubre and or Ricky Rubio, they're not Chris Paul. You don't just move furniture. You move mountains to make that happen for you.
Yes.
And it's exactly the kind of bold move we wanted from the Phoenix Suns, and now they've made it.
Yeah, here's more on the Chris Paul trade from Monty Williams. Said, it was worth taking the risk.
We added a first ballot Hall of Fame point guard to our team. Obviously, that comes with a bit of sacrifice, but we felt like it was one that was more than worth the risk, and we felt like there wasn't much negative risk. We felt like the reward for trading for a guy like Chris and for me, reuniting with him was a bonus.
I agree with that, and I also think it paves the way for what James Jones was able to do once free agency started.
Mm-hmm.
You're getting competent role players, Etuan Moore, Jay Crowder,
yep.
Langston Galloway. These guys are all going to make a contribution. And you look at teams that win championships, they've got veterans of that quality either in the starting lineup or coming off the bench playing prominent roles for them. You saw it with the Lakers. You saw Jay Crowder, the role he played in a starting role for the Heat in the playoffs. He was very, very important to what they were doing. Those are the types of players that when you can blend them with stars like Chris Paul, Devin Booker, potentially DeAndre Ayton, that's what builds championships. So I agree completely with what Monty said. Completely worth this risk for 2 years. And even though there's, almost $90 million of salary tied to it, completely worth it.
Yeah. And now it really what is going to be the fun thing to watch and observe is going to be the effect of Chris Paul on this basketball team. When you look at what went down with Chris Paul and James Harden, they got sideways for a lot of different reasons. It was proof you can't have too many alpha males in a room. You can't have it too many guys trying to lead in different directions. James Harden is an ISO player. He wants the ball in his hands. Chris Paul at this stage in his career wants to run an offense and run plays. And he was very critical of James Harden's how easily James Harden could overlook the small things like moving without the ball, getting back on defense, stuff like that. And Chris Paul is not one to let stuff like that go. He talks and nags and talks and pesters, and it's why he is who he is. James Harden, not a mix for Chris Paul, but to me that always said more about James Harden than it did about Chris Paul. The big question becomes, what is going to be the net effect of Chris Paul on Devin Booker? What is it going to be on DeAndre Ayton? Two different people, two different players, two different guys in need of different things. Chris Paul can accomplish both for both players. How receptive, what will the chemistry be like?
Yeah, and going back to what you said about James Harden, and you know, being an ASU guy, I do root for James Harden to do well. I think when he does well in the NBA, it's a good reflection on the ASU program. But it wasn't just Chris Paul. I mean, James Harden, with all due respect, he's a difficult player to play with because of the reasons you mentioned. He's very ball dominant, incredibly talented, one of the best scorers we've seen in the last 25 years. I think he's an underrated passer, but you know, when you bounce the air out of the basketball at the top of the key and everything's one-on-one, it's tough on teammates. I don't think it worked out very well with Russell Westbrook last year either, and both of those guys still won out of Houston. But, yeah, the net effect, that's what I can't wait to see,
yeah,
is what Chris Paul and, you know, the tough love mentality that he brings as a leader.
Oh,
he's not always going to be, you know, soft and cuddly when getting his message across, and I think there's players on this team that need that message.
What's been interesting to me in listening to players in the organization and talking to people in the organization, from my conversations with the owner to Monty Williams' conversations with the media, like after DeAndre Ayton missed his COVID-19 test in the bubble, this organization has really made a conscientious decision that we need to support this kid emotionally, that we can't push him too far, that we need to give him a lot of love and prop him up that way. It's not how Chris Paul rolls. So Chris Paul, DeAndre Ayton is going to be very interesting, but I think DeAndre Ayton is smart enough to know that guy is a Hall of Famer. I'm going to listen to that guy. The Devin Booker thing is going to be fascinating because it's really going to come down to whose team is it? Does that matter? Is everybody just kind of cool with the fact that it's everyone's team?
Yeah.
It's like, you remember, it's like Kyrie Irving. There'll be a lot of coaches on the Nets. Some days it might be KD. Some days it might be me. Some days it might be Steve Nash. If there's a giving, trusting attitude, then it'll work great.
Yeah, real quick, Kevin Pelton did his projections very analytically based on ESPN.com. Western Conference, looking at it, not surprisingly, Lakers 1, Clippers 2, somewhat surprisingly, Houston still 3 with an average win projection of 41. Which would make them 41-31.
Still have Harden and Westbrook.
They still have Harden and Westbrook,
yeah,
and if they can make it work to any degree, that's still a lot of talent. Utah 4, Denver 5, Dallas 6, New Orleans 7, Suns 8.
Well,
and maybe the most shocking of all, Golden State 14 in the West.
Wow.
One spot ahead of last place, Oklahoma City.
I'm much more bullish on the Phoenix Suns.
I am too.
I think they've got a chance here to really make a quantum leap forward. They've changed so much about the look of this team in a good way, in my opinion. You can roll out a lineup, the Suns team, that smothers you with great defenders. You can roll out a lineup that smothers you with great shooters. You can roll out a lineup that does both.
Yeah.
It just seems really coherent to me, and I could not be more excited, but you already knew that.
I can't wait to see it either. We hit the 1 o'clock hour on this Tuesday with a little version of Social Studies. Next, it's Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Burns and Gambo.
The Cardinals offense struggled to consistently move the ball against the Patriots on Sunday. So how did the absence of Larry Fitzgerald impact the productivity for Kyler and Cliff in New England?